Welcome to the official Robcast podcast. I'm your host, Rob, and this is my podcast. Hello. I want to test this theory that speaking in a smooth, mellifluous voice makes me a prime candidate for a late-night jazz station. No, I want to test a theory that tonality is really more important than words. And I want to test that theory in the ways that I think, how rude of me. I didn't even say hello. Well, I said hello, but I only said hello in like a hello, not mocking way, condescending way, patronizing way. My friend told me a joke the other day. He was being condescending. That means he was talking down to me. But I digress. Already, you say? But, Rob, it hasn't even been a minute into the podcast. How can you digress already? Well, I've already digressed by going on a tangent. No, I don't think it was a tangent. I think it was just a little diversion. It was a detour, if you will. I like that, detour. Isn't that what the Who's band's name was before they became the Who? Was it Detour? Am I making that up? I thought that Roger Daltrey, or no, maybe it was Pete Townsend, named them that. I don't know. But, you know, I've had people IRL, that means in real life, for those of you who don't use text speak. What is it? Double speak? Double speak is the like the version of language in 1984 where they just put words together. We're having a discussion the other day. It's kind of what's happening now with hashtags and text abbreviations. IRL, TTFN, SFU. SFU? Ooh, 6 feet under. Yeah. That's for hardcore fans of Alan Ball shows. Now, I think that what's interesting is this sort of agreed upon collection of words and tones and what agreed upon meaning that we have for them, right? Which is interesting because it's we all have different histories with different words. And different sounds, too. I remember I was talking to this guy at a hotel bar in Hawaii, and he was a contractor for the U.S. Army. He was in Afghanistan. Well, they were in the northern region, and in their base, they had these alarms that would go off. They were just, you know, regular alarms, basically stating that there was an IUD, you know, some sort of rocket launcher projectile being launched from the hills by the Taliban or something like that. So now it's sort of become Pavlovian anytime he hears any sort of alarm, any sort of bell, something associated with, you know, like an alarm clock or a bell at a theater, maybe not that, but he starts to panic, because for him that represents a memory where he wasn't sure if he was going to live or not, if a bomb hit his base and blew it to smithereens. What are smithereens anyway? I know it's a band, not to be confused by the Smiths, which is not an abbreviated version, even though we're talking about a brief verge. And then you get really into it with these emojis. Yeah, what's interesting is that the subconscious mind doesn't operate with words. We turn words into symbols so that our brain can comprehend them. That's sort of, you know, the idea of all these ancient civilizations. I mean, Hebrew, Sanskrit, these written languages, hieroglyphics, Egyptian hieroglyphics, they're symbols. They're visual symbols that our brain can comprehend. And those are really the things that penetrate into our subconscious mind. That's why, you know, you've got people that have vision boards. You've heard of that, where you put pictures up of what you want your life to be, and you keep looking at that vision board daily in the morning, whatever your ritual is, and you start to you know, really bring that forth into the consciousness of your life. You become aware of those things. Those are symbols. You know, art is symbols. Any sort of painting or drawn art, it's all symbols. You know, this represents a human being. This represents an animal. This represents nature. I think what can be kind of interesting is, I'll bet that in the future, we're going towards the ways of not really needing verbal communication. And maybe we'll still have it, like as an antiquated, you know, hobby, like clock making, or you know, I'm only saying clock making because I just finished S-Town. Ooh, I'm not going to tell you anything about it, but I am going to say, go listen to S-Town by Serial and This American Life. It's great. I'm not going to tell you anything else about it. But these antiquated things that, you know, maybe fall by the wayside because they're not necessary in modern society, maybe we will evolve into simply using symbols. Maybe we'll all be connected via the internet, and maybe everyone will have their own symbol. I mean, Prince created his own symbol, and this he was way ahead of his time. This modern world, as we say, didn't know what to do with it. I mean, you know, you couldn't print it in a newspaper. It's not part of the typeset. So they had to use words to describe his symbol. They said, oh yes, the artist formerly known as Prince, which is completely defeating the purpose of what I think he was doing, you know, which is in itself an interesting exercise in examining the reaction to symbology. symbology is ancient. I think that it's going to come back. I mean, if anyone saw that movie Arrival, you know, these are, I don't want to give anything away. Maybe I do. I'll give it away. I didn't really like the movie. But the language part of it was interesting. How the aliens communicated in language. And then how it was so difficult for us to understand, you know, when you misinterpret somebody, they may have said tool, you think they say weapon, you've got a completely different reaction, you know. It's like, it's all in the semantics, I guess. My friend, her father bought her a handgun, a 9mm, and she was moving out. She's moving out of California. She had to ship it to another state. Now, of course, you can only ship it to a business and this and that. You got to do it overnight. There's all these rules with shipping a gun. But one thing that she was told over and over again was you don't walk up into the store and say, I have a gun, right? Because that means something completely different. You may have a gun wrapped up in a box and you want to ship it, but what you say is, hello, good evening, sir or madam, good morning, good afternoon, whatever it may be. I have a firearm in my possession and I would like to ship it overnight so that blah, 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 right? You kind of have to get really formal, because if you use slang, gun, I've got a gun, what it really means to people is, oh no, this person is going to rob us, or oh no, my life is in danger, I might be shot, or oh no, this person seems crazy, whatever it is, it's a threat, it's danger. So can using symbols that directly impact the unconscious mind, can those be any clearer to be able to communicate what we actually mean? It's an interesting exercise. I think, you know, they don't really touch upon it in 1984. He sort of, I think it's going the opposite way. It's this sort of God complex that humans believe that that they can create language when language already exists, right? Communication exists. It's just, you know, what we do with it. I mean, a scientist can communicate with another scientist because they know all of the jargonalized terms, terminology, jargon. Even that's a word that some people may not know, right? And then, you know, probably maybe stupid people can talk to each other as well. They know each other's slang. They know what each other means, right? But yeah, interestingly enough, it's not really what we say, it's how we say it, because tonality is I believe more important than your words, right? I mean, it just is. Well, you know what, what is it? Bertrand Russell said, he said that, I don't want to paraphrase him. See, that's the thing. I want to use his exact language because it was a good quote. And I don't want to paraphrase the quote. But maybe I'll have to, because I can't really find it. I had it pulled up somewhere. No. No, I can't find it. I'll have to get back to you on it. Or what I could do is play God and pause this podcast while I find it. Should I do that? Let me try it. Let me pause this podcast. So I paused the podcast and I realized that the quote that I was looking for actually had nothing to do with what we're talking about. So if I get to a good place to use the quote, I will. But for now, you know what? As a challenge, let me try to fit the quote into the narrative of what we're talking about. Let me manipulate the narrative so that I can use the quote, so that I can feel good about using the quote, so that you guys will think that I'm smart. Well, interestingly enough, I think that language is a barrier. I think that, you know, when we're talking about how scientists understand scientists and how, you know, sort of unintelligent folk have slang terms and drop parts of words, or, and it's not even unintelligent folk. I don't want to even, it's hard to categorize that because, you know, there could be some very smart people who talk in a certain way. For instance, if you're a Southerner, what's the stereotype? Y'all, well, all of a sudden, y'all think that anyone with a Southern accent is stupid, but we all know they're not. They just talk different. You know, so, or that anyone with a New York accent is just a little bit angrier than, was that Boston? Maybe Boston's even angrier. Anyone with a Boston accent is a little bit angrier. Except for those car talk guys. Those guys were always jovial. But they laughed at their own and each other's jokes. Sometimes I had to turn the volume down in the car because they would think that something was so funny that they said that hurt my ears. But I digress. See the way that I used the S as a sort of like a turn, because an S is a turn, so I turned it into the right direction. You know, that's not right, because an S goes in the right direction, then the wrong direction, and then the right direction again. It's almost like that Edward Albee quote from Zoo Story. Sometimes you have to go a long way out of the way to come back a short distance correctly. And I did tell you that I saw a great production of the Zoo Story. It was with deaf actors. It was so fascinating, because that's a language in itself, right? Sign language. But that's also sort of like, you know, language can be exclusionary. Deaf people, they know ASL because they need to learn it. People around deaf people, they learn AFL because ASL because they need to learn it in order to communicate. But there are a lot of professions out there, scientists, astronauts, astrophysicists, you know, they use all these completely over my head terms, and just because I don't know what they mean makes it seem like they're smart compared to me, which is interesting because you know, there's a lot of people who think they're smart but are actually not at all, or who know they're smart but you know, they're not smart at all. They're like, you know, the Donald Trumps of the world. It's actually a psychological phenomenon called the Dunning-Kruger effect, and it's, you know, it's basically the tendency for unskilled individuals to overestimate their own ability, and the tendency for experts to undermine their own ability. And here's where the quote comes in, Bertrand Russell. He said, "In the modern world, the stupid are cocksure, while the intelligent are full of doubt." Who does that sound like? The stupid are cocksure? Does that sound like a certain 45th president of the United States that we all know? Mr. Donald Jr. Trump? No, not Junior. Junior's his son. Donald Joseph, whatever his middle initial stands for. Yeah, I think a lot of stupid people don't realize they're stupid. And it's not just because they lack a vernacular, a wide vernacular. You know, it's not, you know, even though they've done studies and Donald Trump repeats a lot of the same words. Of course, it's almost become a joke where on Facebook you can have Donald Trump tweet to you and, you know, you say, "Oh, Rob, he's tremendous. Tremendous guy. Love him. Great." Or, you know, if he hates you, he'll go, "Terrible. Terrible person. Fake. Boo." You know, it's just like, the thing is, that's a persona. You know, just as me talking to you right now is a persona, I'm using a smooth, mellifluous, deep, baritonous voice. Remember when I said baritonous last week? I never looked it up. But I'm just going to continue to say it until someone corrects me. And then when they correct me, I'll say, it may not be a word now, but it is. Oh, no, it may not have been a word, but it is. I won't stutter and mess it up when I tell it to them. Let's start over. Let's pretend like the last 10 seconds of all of our lives never happened. Ready? Which could be, I mean, think about it. 10 seconds. Yesterday, don't panic. I got into a little bit of a car accident. It was nothing. It was like literally, you know, a few scrapes. The other person didn't even get anything, but it was like, you know, it happens in a second. And like 10 seconds later, I'm like, you know, if I could take back the last 10 seconds of my life, I think I would. I wouldn't have had to deal with the scrapes on my car. But, you know, at the same time, I think that maybe there's a lesson in all of that, right? There could be a reason. Oh, I had to slow down. Oh, I was doing too many things at once. I think that that sort of like see the silver lining. It comes out in a lot of Eastern philosophies, and then it's been like westernized, if you will, which you will, because I implore you to, that they sort of implemented in the psychology. It's like, you know, we could almost look at that as cognitive dissonance, right? So it's like, well, I could think that having a car accident is a bad thing, which innately it is. But then, you know, in order to justify it, or in order, because it has happened, I say, well, you know, it might have been a good thing that that happened, because it really slowed me down, or made me appreciate life, or, you know, it was only a scrape. I start justifying it and thinking, you know, about the, it's basically, you know, I'm holding two contradictory beliefs at the same time. So I think that it's bad, but now I'm thinking, oh no, it's good, because, which is, I don't know. I guess it's a way that we trick our brains into thinking that that we have some sort of control, right? Because if we can control how we react to something, then we can control life, at least the life that's centered around us. Control is one of those interesting things. I think, you know, control is the wall that is up against our conscious mind and our subconscious mind, or our unconscious mind, if you will. I know that, you know, a lot of people who have taken those psychedelics, drugs and whatnot, what's actually happening is this sort of breakdown of that wall, and the unconscious thoughts, the unconscious mind sort of takes over into the consciousness and becomes the new reality. And you sort of let go of the control of things that you once knew, which is, you know, kind of a ritualistic thing. I know that a lot of cultures, especially Amazonian cultures, Peruvian, ancient cultures, have all utilized sort of psychedelics in order to travel, right, into more of an unconscious state. But really, it's just bringing them into, like, this whole sense of, I am not in control. Look at how vast and deep this world is, which is something that's really interesting. It could be called this isn't the same thing, but there's something called the overview effect, and the overview effect is not really experienced by that many people. It's experienced when you see the planet that you live on from a distance. And only astronauts have been able to see this, right? Astronauts and cosmonauts. And in a way, people experience a tiny glimpse of it when we see pictures taken from space of the United States, or sorry, of this world. But, you know, oftentimes, just experiencing that for these astronauts, they have this deep sense of awe, or they could find it deeply moving or inspiring or even emotionally challenging, because their entire the view of the entire Earth changes, and then it changes their perspective in a profound way. Imagine that, being able to look into a distance in real time at the planet that you were born on, and you're not able to see anything but the large masses of land and the large masses of water, and it's so small, and you're so far away from everybody you know, everybody you love, everybody you hate, everything that's dangerous, everything that's exciting, everything. Every bit of information that you've ever learned, every movie that you've ever been inspired by, every book that you've ever read and reread, you are so far away from it. You are looking down on it, and you think, wow, I was really involved in all of that. My life was involved. And now look at me. I'm in this metal box that's somehow floating in the universe, and I'm looking down at my home planet, realizing the profundity of life, of existence, and I am in awe. You know, a lot of times when they return home, they have a renewed sense that they're all connected, or they have a sort of, you know, they understand the relative meaningless of cultural boundaries, or they have a desire to continue the you know, the environmental progress of this planet. And you know, it's really interesting. I mean, that you really have to work hard to be an astronaut. You study a lot. You become smart. Are we born smart, or do we become smart? Is it a product of our environment, nature versus nurture? The whole Caliban conundrum. That was alliteration to make me feel smarter. I think that a lot of it is learned, but a lot of it could also be passed down through the genes of our parents. I mean, you know, what creates a child prodigy? What creates a genius? I don't know. I don't know. I think, you know, these chess whizzes and these violin virtuosos and chess champions, that's a better alliteration, violin virtuosos, these perfect pianists, they exist somehow. Is it to remind the rest of us to not strive, but that there is so much potentiality out there? That's interesting, right? Maybe they're put down here to remind us that there's always more. There's always more to learn. You know, it's interesting because we have this sort of expansion and contraction quality to our lives, and it's like, I want to expand, I want to learn something new, I want to do this. So then we do this, you know, let's say it's taking up sailing, and so you go, yeah, this is adventurous, this is exciting, I love this. But then somehow, you know, that's a fleeting feeling. It's not something that always excites us. Eventually, we feel trapped by that. We go, all I know, all I do is sail all the time. I'm feeling trapped, right? Maybe that's what Trump is doing right now. He's trying to find respite in going on the golf course and golfing and trying to forget about the world. Yet he feels trapped in the game because now he's got such a limited view and such limited experience that's been happening that, you know, he feels helpless. I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, I just know that he's been golfing a lot. And I assume it's because he's trying to run away from the job that he said he wanted, you know, with the with this whole Dunning-Kruger effect, thinking that he was capable of becoming the leader of the free world. I mean, geez, what kind of megalomaniac do you have to be in order to run for president? I understand it's a complete flip of the spectrum. I mean, some people run as altruists, right? They want to help. They see suffering, they want to help. Some people run for egotistical reasons. They want to help themselves. They want people to treat them as if they are more important, right? I think that if you can just take away all these trees and show that forest and travel even higher and higher and see the forest is just a patch of green. I mean, that's, does anyone else, for those of us who have taken airplanes before, does anyone else feel a sense of awe when you're up there and you just see patches of land, different colors of land, or you look through the clouds at the ground and you go, wow, we're thousands of feet up. Imagine what we could do, you know, if we were all as privileged as astronauts. If, now that's an interesting question though, because if, like, we took a large chunk of society and took them away from Earth and showed them the Earth from outer space, would it still have the same effect? Because we would be surrounded by our own community. Or would it be lessened or dissipated or a bit diluted because, as I thesaurus Rolodex, because it's a, a bastardized version of being alone and having everyone else, everything else, home. Home. What is it? It's where we come from. It's where we are. But is it where we go? I think we're going to end it here. Thanks for listening.
Well, that's all the time we have today at Robcast Podcast. Be sure to tune in every week to find the latest Robcast Podcast at officialrobcast.podomatic.com. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter at officialrobcast. Thanks so much for listening. Stay alive.